Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's July the 12th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll hear from University of Illinois agronomist Emerson Nafziger. He has something to say about all those planes that have been in the air over the cornfields of the Midwest. Oh, and don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us for a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on this Thursday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. July wheat at $6.11.5, a half cent higher. September's were down one half at $6.21.5. And December wheat futures at 6.36¾ were up 2¾. July corn futures at 3.44, a settlement price there 8 cents higher. September contract 3.51½, up 8½. And December contract in the corn pit 9¾ higher at $3.65¼. July soybeans 9.10, up 19. August at 9.14½, up 18½, and the November beans at 9.41½, up 18¾. July bean meal 253.70, up 7.30. July bean oil up 20 at 37.75. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, August feeder cattle at 114.30, down 32½. August live cattle at 92.12½, we're down 12½, and the October futures at 96.52½, we're down 22½. July lean hogs at 17½ lower, settled at $69.65 for the day. The outside markets, crude oil, $72.52. They're down 4 cents for the day. And the CRB index at 322.80 is down 0.07. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,778 is now 200 points higher for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You know, I said over there at the Mercantile Exchange, that's not going to happen for very much longer in Chicago. In fact, we got an email today from one of our Board of Trade folks telling us that as of the 13th, this Friday, his email address will change and it will have CME. In the address, now that the Mercantile Exchange has purchased the Board of Trade. To talk about both of those exchanges is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Dan, I almost moved you not only in jobs but in position from Decatur to Chicago. Good afternoon to you. It is really good to have you on board with us this afternoon.
Well, I'm glad to be on board. Spent a lot of time down in Texas over the past 3-4 weeks and did travel along the southern coast a little bit, and they're probably going to be start harvesting some corn down there in Louisiana and here in another week or two. So we are not that far away from some corn harvest.
Can you tell me just a little bit about your new position?
I'm a market analyst here in the grain marketing services area of the ADM Grain Group. My principal role will be supportive in nature. It will be a support role to help ADM customers do a better job of their marketing of their corn and soybeans and wheat. We will be working with individual producers. We will be working with grain merchandisers and whatnot. So my role will be mostly supportive in nature to help ADM customers do a better job in their marketing.
On behalf of Dave Dickey and the station and all our listeners, we're really glad that you're still on board with us this afternoon. Congratulations on your new job.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with a good company here and down here on the trading floor where you see all the excitement going on in the around the world.
Yeah, you better talk about that a little bit. Some people may not know about the trading floor that sits there in Decatur.
Well, this is the trading floor. I think there's somewhere around 250 desks in here, and this is where all of the business of ADM comes together here in the cash world. So you've got a lot of activity going on here. Pretty much 24/7. This office is open 24 hours a day because of the different exchange times in foreign countries and whatnot. So there's always somebody working here in all hours of the night.
It also has the largest, or did have the largest, agricultural tote board outside of the Chicago Board of Trade.
It still does. Yeah. It is still the largest. It's so big that I can even see it without my glasses.
Well, tell me. I bet you were looking at that, and you were looking at some of the numbers on the charts today. And a pretty good outside up day in the corn pit. Beans rallied sharply. Tell me about the charts now.
Well, the bean chart, of course, is the one that everybody's watching. That's the one that's got the most, at least, potential from a technical perspective, and of course, from the fundamental point of view, with the much smaller acreage that we found out here a couple weeks ago. So it has it's been the leader here, whereas corn has struggled quite a bit basically since that large acres report and the good rains that we had in the Corn Belt here during the first the last week of June and the first week or so of July. So beans are the leader, corn's following along. Now today you can see with the beans up 18 cents or thereabouts that they did get into some good fun buying. They did hit some key technical points that brought in some new buy interest. They've surpassed some retracement levels, so people are looking for the probably the next objective on these beans is to get into this 960-ish range. That's probably the first technical objective for these beans, and of course, once you get through that, then we'll have to take a look. But it's driven by weather. Fears of hot and dry weather coming, setting over the Corn Belt to pull down overall crop prospects is gave this market a lot of juice here today, especially corn, because today's balance sheets in corn was really not, there was nothing positive in that. It wasn't necessarily terribly bearish, but the bean numbers were generally friendly because of the acreage numbers. But everybody's focused on the high-pressure ridge coming in here and maybe pulling down crop prospects. But when you're going into a weekend and all the weather guys are on one side of the fence, you begin to worry that something could change over the weekend. So we are in a weather market here, but it does have some pretty strong fundamentals underneath it also.
You mentioned the balance sheets. Of course, USDA this morning releasing the WASDE numbers and the ending stocks for next year. For corn now, $1.502 billion. The average trade guess was 1.383, so they're a little bit, actually quite a bit, 120 million better than that. Soybeans at 245, 245 million on the ending stocks. The average trade guess at 225. Those numbers really didn't do much in the way of trade today.
No, not really. They were initially looked at on the open, but then the market began to focus on weather and what that may or may not do to crop prospects. But I would say, world corn stocks, world wheat stocks did rise from a month ago. Now they're below a year ago, but they did rise some, and that is a possible change in direction. So you have to be a little careful that we haven't maybe saw the lowest corn stocks number, and now we're kind of in a growing of corn stocks, growing of wheat stocks, but that's something to kind of watch, and we won't really get much confirmation of that until you get out of the August crop report. Yeah. But soybean stocks, though, went the other direction. I mean, soybean stocks, world ending stocks went down, and now, of course, the market is worried about maybe the South Americans may not expand enough to pick up the slack here in the U.S. Because of the strength of the real. That is one of the key driving forces here in these soybeans above this $9 level.
Yeah, and those ending stocks for the world numbers were at what? June was at 112 for the wheat, 116.55 is the July estimate. Corn at 108.36 today, and they were at 91.8 for the June estimate. So those are some pretty good jumps in those numbers. Anything farmers ought to be doing at this point?
Well, that's a good question. I think they have to always be careful in here in a weather market. But the market, it does look like the bean market is in a position here to kind of provide leadership at least until the trade feels a little more comfort level with production prospects. And, you know, we're not going to get comfortable with production prospects until we, I think, get closer into August, because August is the bean month. And, of course, as long as beans are kind of leading the pack, and, of course, wheat is a strong influence. Now, wheat did not do much here today, but wheat had its strong up day yesterday, so it kind of took a breather here today. But it does look like we can be a little patient here, but, you know, we're in a weather market, and the weather patterns change overnight, and, you know, we could come in here tomorrow morning and everything be altogether different. But I do think, though, that the beans are strong enough here to maybe hold things up. But the corn market has to go a few more pennies higher. I think it would hit into some fun buying, some technical buy stops, and probably juice it up, and then we would start maybe be looking at a 50% retracement or so of what we've lost in the corn market basically since that June acreage report. But I'd say stay a little patient, at least for now, and see how this weather kind of unfolds here over the next week or two.
Dan, thanks much, and congratulations again.
Thank you.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That'll happen each and every Thursday right here on AM 580.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Indiana Senator and Agriculture Committee member Richard Lugar says there are signs in Congress pointing to a short-term extension of Farm Bill 2002. Lugar says lawmakers are overwhelmed with foreign policy issues tied to the Iraq War. Lugar says a full plate of foreign issues will result in some lawmakers wishing to avoid a grueling Farm Bill debate and pushing for extension of current Farm Bill programs. In Lugar's words, "I see some inklings that this is where we are headed." Lugar is chief Senate sponsor of the Farm 21 bill. It would phase out commodity title payments by creating risk management accounts and improving the crop insurance program. Meanwhile, farm watchers are also suggesting an extension of Farm Bill 2002 is inching closer to reality. Former House Ag Committee Chairman Larry Combest.
Politics will play into it as it gets closer to the end of September, and they haven't finalized anything, then I think they're going to have to act. And that's why all along I've still felt that a continuation of basically the current policy is very possible, because it's something that's widely supported across the country in agriculture, and it makes a very good fallback position when they can't finalize something that that maybe they're working on now.
Combest says current House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson will have to appeal to the interests of a number of special interest groups, including what he calls the radical environmentalists, something Combest did not have to contend with in authoring the 2002 Farm Bill. The American Farm Bureau Federation Board of Directors has voted to support the U.S.-Korea Trade Promotion Agreement if the country fully complies with OIE controlled risk guidelines and beef trade resumes. Farm Bureau President Bob Stallman says U.S. agriculture has a lot to gain from the trade deal. It's estimated U.S. ag exports will increase by $1.6 billion with full implementation of the agreement in 2027. Stallman says the FTA also provides duty-free and reduced tariff access, allowing the U.S. to become a competitive supplier of ag products to South Korea. According to Consumer Reports, U.S. consumers overwhelmingly support stricter food labeling laws. The publication says a poll shows 92% of Americans want to know which country produced the food they are buying. Bill Bullard is CEO of RCAF USA, a supporter of mandatory country of origin labeling.
The increased awareness for imported foods, particularly coming from China, has caused consumers to be acutely aware of the need to know where food is produced. And so we're seeing that reflected now in survey after survey. And this latest survey says that 92% of consumers want to know where their food is produced with a label. And that's precisely what we're trying to achieve for them.
The poll was conducted with just over 1,000 telephone interviews between June 7th and June 10th of this year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Up next, you've seen the planes in the air over the cornfields of the Midwest. I asked Emerson Nafziger, University of Illinois Extension agronomist, if the fungicides most of them were spraying were a worthwhile expense. He's already said no, but that it didn't really keep the planes on the ground.
And I put in data on the on our data, and you know, I made the statement there that we have pretty clear evidence that this fungicide headline, basically, because that company has been most aggressive and they've paid for research to try to figure out what it might be doing. So this whole plant health euphemism that they came up with is a, you know, we think this stuff will increase yields without disease, but we don't want to put that in writing kind of thing. You see, they believe fully, and I don't disagree, that this material might have some growth regulator activity. And they've talked about it reducing respiration rates, which in plants can be a positive thing. But I went on to say that in my average over the 10 trials I had to drag data out from was about 6 bushel, which isn't enough. That doesn't pay for the material in the application. So, but it ranged from none to 12. 12 is enough, and 12 to 15 is the magic range that BASF has on their website, and they say they've had 5,000 on-farm trials, you know, and they're averaging 12 to 15 bushel yield increase. And so it's pretty clear that this is not all disease that they're controlling. And that's why we see these planes flying, even though there's essentially no diseases out there at all. This has been the year of the non-disease. I mean, the dry weather we had for weeks, and then we got a good amounts of rainfall the last week of June. But since then, as we see here, it's cool and dry and the breeze is blowing. This is just not weather for foliar diseases to develop. So I'm sure that the price of corn is high. People are looking at a crop in pretty good condition in most cases. They're saying, well, I think even if it isn't necessary, you know, it seems like a reasonable expenditure because we don't need a big yield increase to pay for it, and we're going to spend money on this crop in ways that we can think to spend money to assure that it's going to be there. I made the point clearly that we don't have any way to guess if it's a physiological effect rather than a disease control effect that fungicide is having. We don't have any way to guess what conditions that would come forth under. So we saw one trial last year where corn following soybean had a greater response than corn following corn. Well, that goes to the point that, you know, disease probably isn't part the whole picture in many cases. In that trial, we didn't have very much disease in either rotation. But there is a lot of corn after corn this year, and people at least, I think that helped get the ball rolling on this and said, well, that's where you get your foliar diseases, and that's where you need to protect. So there is some protection, but the label on these fungicides suggests that, you know, 2 to 3 weeks, they're going to lose much of their effectiveness, and The label even talks about a respray if necessary. Well, we're at a point now, the crop is well ahead of normal. It's certainly well on its way to good yields, if nothing bad happens. And we say that with more confidence than we usually have at this time of the year, because pollination seems to have been so successful in so many fields. We can see these, you know, if you drive by the field and notice the silks, that's usually a good sign that they got out and were in good shape. And also that, you know, rootworms didn't eat them off. So the other reason that people are giving, and that is, you know, that they can stick some insecticide in there at the same time and not pay extra for application, is certainly true. But, you know, unlike the fungicides, I don't think anybody has thought that the insecticides might be giving some kind of yield increase if there aren't any insects to control. So sort of covering the world here with fungicides and insecticides, I guess, isn't along the lines of the IPM that people have talked about for so long. And we're kind of concerned about it just as a practice. We worry that things like this fall into the normal practice category where you just do it without thinking. And fungicides and insecticides, because of what they do and because of what they cost, should probably never be just done without thinking. And we are concerned that that might be happening in some cases.
That was U of I Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger speaking about the prophylactic application of fungicides to corn that has been taking place across the state of Illinois and in other parts of the Midwest. It's a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is WILL Urbana. We're joined now to take a look at the cash grain market by Bill Mayer, Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. He's at the elevator there. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's talk about soybean bases to begin with, please.
Yeah, it's kind of wild out here. It's the last few days especially, it's not been unusual to see, you know, 10 to 20 cent changes in basis from day to day. The Gulf market dropped the other day 20 cents. Just to step back and look at things in general, the cash market on beans is telling us that there's plenty of beans out here, which, of course, we all know. And it's, you know, as the basis backs off, the market in general is saying, you know, we don't want any beans. And the board goes up and the basis backs off and they still seem to see beans moving, and then the next day the same thing happens. And I think that's really something that we've been seeing a lot of. The other thing that I think the listeners need to know and make sure they're aware of is there's really a wide variation out here in the bean basis from, you know, even within, say, the river to east central Illinois. I found today doing some work for some people, 50 cents difference in cash bids. And as well, you've got anywhere from 10 cents difference fall to Jan versus, maybe 50 cents difference fall to Jan bids. So it's just kind of a wild market out there.
Does it all tell you that farmers, if they can all possible, just go ahead and store and keep them, or are cash levels, are futures levels likely to crash down to the cash level as we go through the month of August?
Well, of course, you don't know that. A lot's going to depend on the weather, as Dan talked about earlier. But one thing that I'm probably convinced of, and that is that the widest basis levels are probably going to come at the highest futures levels, and for the bases to get better, I think the futures have to come down. So if we see these high levels and continue to go up, I'm not sure that we don't continue to see the wide basis levels right on into harvest. I think to answer your question, yes, I mean, storing, you can take advantage of it, but I think you have to be committed to that if you do it. It doesn't necessarily have to change, you know, in the next 30 days. It could or could not, but, it, you know, it may be next spring before you see any change.
We appreciate you being with us. What are your bids for the day?
323 on the corn and 824 on the beans.
Thanks much, Bill. Bill Mayers with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Thursday afternoons. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin says he hopes Governor Rob Blagojevich and other Illinois officials exercise leadership to end the state budget impasse. Durbin, the second highest-ranking Democrat in the U.S. Senate, says Congress has passed a record amount of federal transportation money for Illinois, but the state gets the funds only if it provides some money of its own. He says the state budget deadlock is holding up that money and could keep important projects in Illinois from going forward. The chancellor at the University of Illinois Chicago campus will retire at the end of the year. Sylvia Manning came to UIC in 1994. She's led the campus since 1999. Manning says the time was right to step down because she's happy with the management team in place on the Chicago campus. The 63-year-old Yale graduate also helped with U of I web-based initiatives. University President Joseph White plans a national search to find Manning's replacement. Operatic tenor Jerry Hadley remains hospitalized today for a gunshot wound that police say was self-inflicted. The U of I alumnus is known for creating the title role in composer John Harbison's The Great Gatsby at the Metropolitan Opera, as well as the lead in Paul McCartney's Liverpool Oratorio. A hospital employee in Poughkeepsie, New York, declined to provide an update on his condition today, citing confidentiality laws. Hadley was on life support yesterday. Jerry Hadley grew up in Manlius near Peoria and got his undergraduate degree from Bradley University and then his advanced music degree from the U of I School of Music. A Terre Haute police officer accused of child molestation is free on bail after surrendering to authorities. Officer Carl Graham pleaded not guilty to three felony counts of child molestation. A statement from Graham's family said he maintains his innocence and believes he will be vindicated. An October 16th sentencing date is scheduled for a man who admitted that he misled federal authorities into thinking a Muslim student planned a terrorist attack on Chicago's Sears Tower. Adam Hart pleaded guilty in Boston yesterday. He'd claimed that a University of Chicago student he met online was planning to bomb the skyscraper. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. This is the Closing Mark Report on WILL. We're joined to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast on this Thursday afternoon by Pete Levitt, meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's another gorgeous day here in the Midwest across at least Champaign County and the eastern part of Illinois. Can we expect this trend to continue for a while?
I think so. We look for pretty much similar weather right on through the weekend and right into the middle of next week. Not without a few showers here and there, but they all appear to be the brief sort of afternoon, evening type of activity that comes and goes and provides useful moisture while not interrupting daytime activities too much. We have a band of these this afternoon across southwestern Iowa, which is going to extend southeastward into southern Illinois late today and tonight, produce a few showers. Another thinner band up north might produce an isolated shower or two. And we're going to see this going on for the next couple of days. A vortex of low pressure is rather persistent over Ontario in Canada, and just this counterclockwise circulation just keeps dragging these systems from northwest to southeast across the Midwestern states, and the boundary between the cooler air this brings and the warmer, humid air to the south is such that opportunities for showers will exist. But all in all, it looks like a pretty nice weekend, and temperatures a little below normal, and then heating up as we move through next week.
Will there be enough rainfall for the folks up in Minnesota and parts of the Western Belt? Are they getting any? How dry are they?
Well, they are pretty dry, although they're still qualified as being in the drought area. It's the further north you go, or northeast you go, the drier it gets up there. They'll get a few showers. I don't see very much for them, though. This pattern hasn't really gotten them wet yet for this seasonal pattern we're in. So you should get more in the way of showers. They won't be absolutely dry. It's still going to take a week or two to get enough moisture for them.
And anything we ought to be checking in around the globe?
Oh, around the globe, weather looks pretty good in most places. The areas we're looking at more rain, of course, in the southern plains, eastern portions of winter wheat, which has been a problem for them. I'm still looking at a lot of cold air, in the Argentine and Brazil, and that's going to affect some winter wheat in those states. I think everybody knows by now they had their first snowfall since 1918 in Buenos Aires earlier this week. And the cold air is there, and some of it may come north, and we'll have to look at it next week when we think it might be a threat to some of the more sensitive crops further north in southern Brazil.
On that note, we'll thank you, and we'll talk to you again next Thursday.
All right.
And that is Pete Levitt. He's meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Thursday afternoon. Remember to tune in tomorrow morning for the pre-opening commodity market report. That is at the hour of 10 until 9 o'clock Central Time. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.